Alan Kring Productions in association with the Emergent Light Studio presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Financial Management MBA 440 for Spring Semester 2022.
Tonight, the time value of money. In some other classes, well, let's be specific here. In accounting, you will have tables that you will frequently use to do financial accounting, or rather, finance problems involving the time value of money. They have these big tables at the back of the book, and you go and you find your table fact, your annuity or your value factor in this big heavy table. And then you go and you apply that to the cash flow, and there's your Uncle Bob. We don't do it that way in finance anymore. We use calculators to do it. There's not much reason to go to a table because the table was generated by someone's calculator anyway, or someone's computer. So there's not much point in trying to prove yourself by whipping through a table when we can use the financial calculator, and then when we get a result, we can then alter a number. Well, let's see what happens if we change the interest rate or change the number of periods or something like that. And we can see the effect very quickly, far more quickly than we can if we're in a tables looking up, or a formula, for heaven's sakes. A formula will kill you. Now, your book offers how to use several different calculators, the BA2, the HP10C, and I use the TI-83 in class, and you're going to see why. If you use a BA2, or if you've used one in the past, you're going to see that these calculators, like the TI-83, are much more powerful, and they get you answers much more quickly than the lower-end primitive financial calculators do. What does this mean for you as far as testing goes? On a test, you are obviously going to have your calculator, either virtual or in real time, available to you to get answers. You can use formulas if you wish, and in some cases I will certainly show you a formula, but I don't expect you to use the formula. We are in the business of getting answers and then analyzing answers. In accounting, their purpose is different. They are creators of information products. After they created the information product, it is other people's job to try to figure out what those numbers mean. You'll see that a lot in this class. In our business, we need to get the numbers quickly and then get down to the serious business of doing that, finding out what they mean, what they tell us. So in that regard, I begin with a simple, now I'm sure that most of you, if not all of you, have certainly seen time value of money before. So I'm not giving you any breaking news. However, I do have a variety of student types in the class. In an MBA class, I'll have everyone from a finance genius on through to someone who isn't really all that up to speed with finance and with time values of money and all of that. However, I'm going to have to carry this around with me because I don't know what the gain on that mic is. This is money, and it's right now money. This is $1 now. But I'm going to come and ask you a very simple question. Sir, you tell me. I could give you $100 right now, tonight, or I can give you $100 in a year. Which do you prefer? You greedy SOB. Well, of course you do, and we think of that as a natural thing. But there's an amazing thing going on behind it. This is the dynamic of what we call interest. In order to delay consumption, you have to be given a reward. An interest rate at its heart is simply a reward for giving up consumption at the present time and waiting for some time in the future for that. So in other words, an interest rate in a real sense is an opportunity cost of foregone consumption. An interest rate is an opportunity cost of foregone consumption. Now, how much that opportunity cost will be, depends on a number of factors. And we'll look at that in the following weeks. What drives interest rates to be what they are? And that will have some real use to you in your investment thinking, investment patterns. But for now, let's talk about we have an interest rate. Now, we start off with a simple one, very simple formula. The future value of money is its present value, right now, times 1 plus some interest rate to the nth power. This is compounding. Fortunately, I don't think your book, if I'm not mistaken, I've got several different books I use. Some books still talk about simple interest, but realistically, that's almost non-existent. This is compounding interest. However, something that's important here. This R is the periodic interest rate. So in other words, if you told me that the interest rate was 6% annually, and it was compounded semi-annually, then the R would be the 6% divided by 2 compoundings per year. So I would use a 3% for the R in there. If I said quarterly, what would you divide it by?
4.
Okay. Bi-weekly. No, let's try weekly. 52. You know, I gave it on an exam. This was about 4 years ago. I put weekly for a car payment. Weekly car payments. And I had this girl get it wrong. She said, well, no, she didn't. She came up during the exam and she said, how many weeks are in a year? I said, you don't know? She says, how would I know? My dad makes my car payments. Yeah. Okay, and it's nice to teach adults here sometimes. 52. Okay, what about bi-weekly? No, there's a very specific, bi and semi have very distinct meanings. Bi would mean every 2 of those periods. Semi would mean half of that period. So semi-annual is twice a year, divide the 12 by 2, okay, every 6 months. And of course, you could even get down to daily. Now, interestingly enough, let me finish this up and I'll get along. The N is the number of periods. The number of periods that we're going to use. So that would mean that this one, let's say that it was 5 years, semi-annual. So that would be 5 times 2, 10 periods. In other words, there would be 10 compoundings because there would be 2 compoundings every year. So when you are doing these in the calculator, you key in the annual and then if it's the N, you'll put in the years times the compoundings per year. Then you drop down to the I percent and you put in the APR, the annual percentage rate, and then you divide that by the number of periods. Okay? And we'll go through a bunch of problems here tonight just to make sure that you have this down. Now, you can have semi-annual, semi-annual, quarterly, monthly. Monthly is very common, of course, because that's a payment. Normally, payments on cars and homes are that way. But you can even have daily. Now, interestingly enough, with daily, the rule is that you divide the R, the APR, by 360, but you pop the power to the number of years times 365. It's an old rule that's been around. So it's 360 to divide for the R, and it's 365 to multiply for the N.
It's just the way it's been done for years. Why 360? Well, the old rule, the explanation we give most people is there are 360 bank days in a year. Okay? But there's actually another reason. There's an old trick going back to the 1700s. There's a rule that you can use to get to divide by 360. And back before there were calculators, and when they were trying to work fast enough that they didn't use slide rules, they would use this trick of 360. It was called the rule of 360s. And you can get a number divided by 360 very quickly. So they said, well, we'll use 360 because that's how many bankers' days there are here. Don't ask me, it's just how it's done. Now, some of the modern books just say 365 both places, or 360 both places. But do know that most of the banking computers in the United States still do it 360 to divide the interest and 365 to times the years. Now, there's also daily, that's daily compounding. Now, you can also go to it gets kind of brutal. You can go to hourly compounding, minutely compounding, and then for very, very large accounts that probably you'll never see, there's actually instantaneous compounding. It has a different formula. It uses the natural constant E to get your values. And I don't think we'll cross that here, but yes, there is instantaneous compounding, and it's done for very large, wealthy clients of banks and other financial institutions. But anyway, a couple of other things. Now, I'm going to write this again. FD equals PV times 1 plus R to the nth. Now, this is to find the future value of a present amount of money. You tell me the amount you've got, the APR and the compoundings, and the number of years, and I've got it. I've got what it'll be. And it's nothing hard about that. I'm going to show you how you can do that on a calculator very rapidly. You don't have to use a formula. Really? Okay. Now start following with me. If you want to photograph this, you can when I get to the screen. There is one finance app that is powerful that does a lot of the problems in a basic finance environment, and it does them very rapidly in a visually clear screen. The one problem that I always have had with the smaller, cheaper financial calculators is that you can't see all of the numbers at once. You put one in, and then you go on and put another one in. Here, you're going to see all of them at once. Apps, finance, or finance, if you come from Decatur, TVM solver. Boy, you're a rough crowd. Okay, watch this. Watch this. Okay, let's say, what is... Well, you put $150 into an account that pays 5.25% compounded quarterly. How much will you have after 8 years? Now, you can do this. The future value will be $150 times 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 4 quarterly to the 8 years times 4 compoundings per year. You can do that. And I guarantee you that if you see me do it, I will probably make a mistake. I taught math at the Ohio State University for 9 years, and boy, did I mess up a lot of kids. Even when I've got a calculator, I still screw something up. But yeah, we can do this. Matter of fact, let me come out here for a moment and do it by the formula. I can say $150 times, open the parentheses, 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 4, close the parentheses, raise it to. Now here's one of the places where students and even I will make a mistake. You need to trap that number up there, 8 times 4. Now one thing that I strongly encourage you to work with me is to do as few calculations in your head as you possibly can. That's where most of your mistakes are going to be made, and that's where you slow down is by, well, I can do 8 times 4. Well, that's 48, isn't it? No, you see, you're just asking for it. The calculator was built to do that. It's happy to do that. It's like Alexa. You can tell Alexa to do anything, and she will, within reason. But, and this is very important when you use the apps, because don't try to impress the calculator. I tell this to all of my students in every finance class, even up to my most advanced class, don't try to impress a computer. It can beat you every minute with math. So we get this answer, $227.67. Now here's the next thing. In finance, if you make a mistake, it is very likely to cause the answer to look ridiculous. That's a good thing, because I can look at this, does this make sense? After 8 years, I put $150 in the bank and I've got 5.25% interest. Does that look like a right number? Yes, it does. You see, in what's happening is many of our formulas in finance, they have exponents in them. So when you make a mistake, the error blows up exponentially, if you'll forgive the unintended pun there. It actually won't make sense. So this gives us, this doesn't prove that it's right, but what it does is it gives you a sense, yeah, this is probably at least close to right. Now let's go in and let's use the time value of money. And, well, that was 8 years times 4 periods per year. Drop it down. Don't hit enter. And don't ever clear out a number. Just override it. Now the interest. Now this is the part where you've got to watch yourself, because math uses decimal percentages. But apps almost always in calculators use percentages. This is not true in Excel. But in this app, it's trying to tell you, don't do the decimal. So I'm going to just say 5.25, and I'm going to divide that by 4. Again, don't hit enter, and don't try to calculate it someplace else and then put it in here. Let the calculator roll for you. Very much like you will, if any of you learned MMA or any of the martial arts, don't force. Let your body carry the weight of the fight. Let the gravity, let the wind, and all of that. That's what we're doing here. Now we got a present value of $150. In calculators, almost all calculator chips, since they were started building them in the 1970s, think that a present value should be a negative. That's just how it is. You better put it in as a negative, and when it comes out, it will come out as a negative. Don't ask me why, it's just how they work. So we put in $150 negative. Now we didn't put any extra payments in. Now, leave these alone for heaven's sakes. Just come back up here. Now we will use these a little later. There are some really weird problems where these can save us a lot of pain. As a matter of fact, there's an example in the book where you're putting in the payments of $100 every year, but the bank account is compounding twice a year. And how you do that in some calculators is just like pain. In this one, it's so easy, it's ridiculous. But anyway, in this one, all I do is put it on FV, and you can bring out your, if you want to bring out your computers and use the virtual, by all means. FV, alpha, always use alpha, enter, that solves. Well, spank me hard, look at that. The same answer without doing any real math. All you did was key in numbers, and you got the answer. That's the power of the financial calculators. Again, we are not accountants. We're not mathematicians. I am a mathematician, but I do this. You just let the calculator carry it. That way, we spend our time looking at the answers, seeing what they mean, and then maybe altering the numbers and seeing what we get from altering the numbers. That's all there is to it. Now, the other side of this, if I turn this formula around, I would get future value over 1 plus r to the n would be the present value. What is the now value of money that occurs in the future? Okay. We can write that a little bit more simply. And you probably remember this from math. If I want to write a denominator, I can write it as a numerator to the negative of the power. The reason I encourage this is denominators in calculations are a beast. They are something that will hurt your feelings simply because you're more likely to make a mistake with a parenthesis out of place or something like that. And putting it up on top puts it on one line, and then that makes it a little bit easier to go to use. So, turns out that you are going to inherit $1 million in 20 years. Okay? Now we might ask, what would you accept instead, right now, instead of $1 million in 20 years? Let's say you want to find the current value of a $1 million sum of money, you would get in 20 years. Consider that you could invest that money at an APR of 4.99% compounded weekly. Okay, here we go. The present value would be $1 million times 1 plus 0.0499 over 52 to the negative 20 years times 52 compoundings per year. Now, in one sense, this isn't hard. I mean, this is math. It's not like when I teach high school and they throw a fit if I put two multiplications in a single problem. But sometimes it depends on the kids. But let me show you. We can do this. It's 1 million times 1 plus 0.0499 divided by 52 raised to the power, open parenthesis, negative. I encourage you not to use a minus sign, because there really is a difference, and calculators know it, between the negative and the minus. The minus is a binary operator. It operates between two numbers. The negative is a unary number. And so you're saying it's a negative of 20 years times 52 weeks a year. Close the parentheses, and you would accept, you would be indifferent under this interest rate regime. You would be indifferent to a million in 20 years or $368,792 right now. That's what we're saying, is that that interest rate is equilibrating 20 years out, compounding 52 weeks a year, with an amount of money now. So now let's do it over here. Apps, finance, TVM solver. Again, don't clear, just overwrite. N would be 20 times 52. Drop it down. The I percent, remember that you're giving it percentages because that's the way the finance apps use it. We would have 4.99 divided by 52 compoundings in the year. The present value, just leave it alone. Leave it alone. Don't clear it, for heaven's sakes. You might get an error doing that. We don't have payments along the way. But the future value is $1 million. Leave everything else alone and just walk back up here. And alpha, solve. Well, there you go. Me personally, I think this is easier. You are much less prone to errors doing it this way than if you do it with calculations or, for God's sake, with the accounting tables. Those can get to be a lot like work with these kinds of problems. Just as a historical note, not to bore you with this, when I was a child many, many years ago, yes, back in the Stone Age, I basically lived in an office, a loan office that my mother and father managed. They were the only two employees of these rich people in this town who invested a pile of money to make loans. And there was a book. It was this thick, literally. And I didn't understand it until I was like 9 or 10 years old. It was annuity tables for different interest rates, different compoundings, different numbers of years for the loans. And it was insanely deep. Interest rates down to hundreds of percents on this side, periods from one clear through to, in some cases, up to 360 for a 30-year monthly payment mortgage. And I recall that, and that's one of the reasons I want to avoid that in our lives here. We can do this so much faster the way we're doing it here. Let me show you stupid pet tricks now. Now, generally, if it's just a single amount of money, which I've done here, those are called lump sum problems. There's a lump of money, a lump sum. You're going to get a lump sum in 20 years. You've got a lump sum now that you're going to shoot forward. Now, the alternative is a cash flow that has more than one amount. Those are called annuities. Now, there are all kinds of little attachments you can put to that. If it has the periodic payments that are all the same length of period, it's called regular. You don't hear that one too much. But almost anything we're going to calculate will be a regular annuity. But more importantly is the annuities that have the same amount in each of the payments. Those are called level annuities. They are how we calculate home mortgage payments, car payments, and all those kinds of things. Financial planners use the assumption of level annuities all the time. Now, there are two other breeds of annuities. There are annuities where the payments occur at the end of the period. And then there are annuities when the payments occur at the beginning of the period. So, for example, you, sir, want to buy a nice car. So you come to me, and I'm going to lend you the money. Like I'd really lend you money. No, you understand that what I'm going to do is I'm going to make the loan to you, and your first payment is going to be owed to me at the end of the period. So that would be an ordinary annuity. They're the most common type is one that your first payment occurs after a month or after a week or something like that. Now, let's take the other side of it. You, sir, you have a significant other. And that significant other says to you those three words. No, it's four words. Four words that change your life. Those four words are, we're having a baby. Now, when it happened to me, I thought about killing myself, but I got through it. I made it. And of course, the child was born, and I was just hyped. Afterwards, I was exhausted. I left the hospital, and I was just feeling great. I went to a White Castle, and I regretted that so very much because I got out of 30 cases and ate them. But I decided right there, I am going to put money in the bank today. I had a couple of grand, and I vowed that every year on that child's birthday, I was going to put $2,000 in the bank. And then at the 17th birthday, I would put in the last $2,000, and then the whole amount would ride forward, and when the kid was 18, I'd give the kid the check for college. Or for meth, you know, whatever the kid wanted. You understand that's an annuity due because the payments occur at the beginnings of the periods. And then that last payment rides a whole period. That's an annuity due. And yeah, they are actually for financial planning rather common. When you put in your first payment, well, you write, if you want us to start, you have to write your first check to me today so I can get the investment started for you. So annuity dues are actually there. This calculator turns off to save the battery. Why? Oh, okay, I'm okay. So in order to do the annuity due thing, if it's an ordinary annuity, leave it on the end. If it's an annuity due, you put it on the beginning. Now, for heaven's sakes, check this, because by the time I think by the time we get to the midterm, you'll have a mix of problems. Some will be annuity due, some will be ordinary annuity. I don't want you to do an annuity due problem and then go to an ordinary annuity and forget to switch. What I try to do is remember, give them the ordinary annuity problems first and then the annuity due, so they won't make that mistake. But sometimes the randomization gets the annuity due ones first. But anyway, let's try that. Oh, the car. Now, what kind of car do you like?
Hyundai?
Okay. Well, yeah, did you actually, don't they have the Santa Fe? I think Hyundai is the Santa Fe, one of those. Okay, let's say that you're going to get yourself a real excellent car, okay? By excellent, our standards. Let's say it's a $22,000 car, okay? Okay, 6-year loan for $22,000, APR, is 4.59% Okay, good. This one is priceless. Let's take it, let's walk it down the channel. 6 years. $12 payments a year. Down the meat grinder. I percent 4.59. Divided by 12. Now the present value is what you're going to borrow. And again, don't forget to negativize it. Negativize one, something like that. Now we have no future value on these. Now there is a place where you might run into it on a lease payment. There's some of those lease payments actually have a kicker at the end you can pay if you want to claim ownership of the car. So it's not impossible that there would be an FV value, but for a normal loan, there's not going to be one. So now we check to make sure everything, and this is on end and everything else is nice, and we put it on the payment, alpha solve. $350 a month is what you're going to pay, yes. It'll always be, for any problem I give you that would be a loan, unless I said you have to make your payment now, which I never will, it will always be at the end. It will be an ordinary annuity, always. However, I could give the other kind of problem, and I'm going to do one of those in a minute here. But now, the next question again is, does this answer make sense? I mean, if you got an answer that was like $85, yeah, that'd be great, but you know very well that can't be right. Or if I got an answer that was like $10,000 a month, no, that wouldn't be right either. So in other words, the number will be somewhere in an obvious kind of range. For me, these kinds of car payments just like knock me dead. I can't afford that. So I drive a terrible, I mean, it'd look better if I didn't have so much food in there. But okay, there's another part to this too. Let me show you a couple of things here. Let me come out. Well, now I have this information in the machine right now, back there in that app. Now, let's say, well, how much will I still owe on this car in 4 years? Apps, finance. Now, if you go down here far enough, there it is, balance, bal, enter. Well, 4 years times 12 payments a year, what will be the balance after 48 months is basically what you're saying. Is that right? Wow. That's killing me. Okay. Now let's try another thing here. Let me check that app just to make sure it's clean through there. 72, yeah. Okay, we're fine, we're good. Okay, now second quit. Now let's try another one. How much interest have I paid after 5 years? Apps, finance, Now let me go down here to the sum of the interest payments for month 1 through month 5 times 12. That's how much interest I would have paid. Now there's one more thing. A little bit of history.
So that's why you wrote 1 and 5.
One, it's saying the sum of your interest payments from month 1 through this, through month, what was that, 60, month one, months 1 through 60. Another way you could think, you could actually say, okay, if I wanted to find out how much interest I paid in the second year of the car, I could go apps, finance, go down here to this interest, sum of interest, and I could say during the second year, that would be months 13 through 24, I would have paid $788.97. So you can, one of the nice things about this is that if you're doing your taxes, you can deduct the interest on your home loan. You could do a quick dirty. Okay, I'm in the 14th year of this loan. So how much interest did I pay in 14 times 12, or 13 times 12 through 14 times 12? So I could find out the interest for a specific year. And sometimes when you see home loans, it'll just kill you. But I'm glad you brought that up. I kind of forget to do that sometimes. But let me give you a quick historical background. Back before the 1930s, the government was very much hands-off, laissez-faire. The best business is business that has no government regulatory interference. And in the 1920s, the rich got richer and the poor got poorer. It was getting to be a really serious situation by about, even in 1925, 1926, the Roaring Twenties was the Roaring Twenties for the rich. Although there was a wonderful art movement, music was getting really fabulous, and clothing was too. But you had a lot of scams and cons going on. They've been going on for decades. I mean, after the Civil War, every dog beater, cat strangler, liar, cheater, nose picker, and con man and grifter was playing the field because there was no enforcement of anything. They could take people's money, the very wealthy, powerful families that you hear their names to this day. They got their start with their lying and cheating in this era. Well, in the 1920s, it got to be ridiculous. Interest rates, I could do an interest rate, and it was so common, it was just kind of embarrassing, where I would offer you, sir, you give me $100,000, and in 1 year, I will pitch you $50,000 back. Yes, I will. 50% return on your investment. I guarantee it. Okay? I'm the man who puts the D in business. So in a year, I can do, ma'am, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I am going to turn your, you give me $300,000, I will turn into $500,000 in 1 year. But you can't get any benefits. 67% rate of return. Well, what I do is I get your money and I pay your sorry ass back. Then I spend money and have a good time. And then when I get time for you, I come to you, well, sir, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking you've heard this story before, but you're wrong, my friend, absolutely wrong. I'm going to ask you to invest in me $2 million, and I promise you, I guarantee you that I will give you back $4 million in 1 year. Yes, I will. You see, it's a pyramid scheme. Yes, they have. Thousands and thousands were going on. And of course, eventually, people would say, well, where did that guy go? And, well, he was last seen leaving town in a late model Rolls Royce. And you were all stuck. You were eventually, someone was left holding the bag. So, of course, I mean, these schemes were going around. There was so much ruin. Banks were being destroyed, and I'll talk about that at a later time in the course. But what happened was they threw the rascals out in the 1932 election. They just threw them out. The voters finally had enough. And they had reformers come in. And I'm not talking about reformers like we hear today. Well, maybe we'll move a little forward with a few things. No, these were hardcore. And among the laws that they passed were laws that regulated the banking industry. They were called, it was actually an act of Congress called Glass-Steagall. I won't hold you to that now, but I will later. But one of the things Glass-Steagall said is there's a cap on interest rates that can be offered. 5.25% is the highest that any bank can offer. Any bank. Well, actually, the banks didn't bitch about that because interest rates were stupidly low. As a matter of fact, interest rates were so low they were possibly even negative for a few months several times. But I mean, they were so low that this was a price ceiling, but it was not an effective price ceiling because no interest rates were anywhere near that because the government was printing money rapidly, which dropped their interest rates. They were printing money to get us out of the Great Depression. Okay, well, reel forward into the later 30s, and interest rates were starting to show some pressure upward. There was an inflation premium starting to embed. And you also had another problem. These non-banks that were outside of the regulatory power of the Glass-Steagall were offering interest rates that were better than 5.25%. All they had to do was say 5.3%. And of course, people would pull their money out of the banks. Well, you can offer me 5.25, these guys will offer me 5.3. So here's what they did. They figured out that there was a trick. The law did not say anything about compounding. So you could say 5.25% compounded quarterly, and the effective rate would be more than 5.25%, but you were still in compliance with Glass-Steagall. Now, there's a formula for this. There's actually a formula for this. It's not a hard formula, but I'll show you how you can do it on your calculator, too. The effective rate is 1 plus the APR over the number of compoundings to the number of compoundings. Don't put any years in. Don't put any years. Just leave it. I'm going to try to trick you on an exam or a quiz or a midterm. I will say, well, what would be the effective rate after 12 years? Oh, God, where is that going? No, you just put in the stupid APR. So in other words, if I took that 5.25% APR, compounded quarterly, what I would get is one plus 0.0525. Close a parenthesis, to the fourth power. Don't let me fool you if I tell you a number of years. It doesn't go anyplace. Oops, I made a mistake. I'm supposed to put in divided by 4. So it's the denominator should be the same as the exponent. The number of compoundings. And if I do that, oops, and then I forgot minus 1. Yep. Do that every time I write that formula, minus 1. Yeah. Minus 1. Okay, let's try it again. Okay. 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 4, close the parenthesis, to the fourth, minus 1, There it is, 5.35%. 5.35%. So in other words, to do this one, you do 1 plus 0.0525 over 4 to the fourth power minus 1. Do you see how you've actually created an effective rate that is above the statutory rate? That was why they started doing it, because of that trick. And if you made it like monthly or daily or hourly or minutely, it gets even more attractive. And like I said, there is also the instantaneous version of it, which is kind of weird. But anyway, let me show you something here. But I've got even better news for you. Apps, finance. EFF, 5.25. Now remember, apps, you use the percentage, comma, 4. Well, look at that. Isn't that awesome how fast it comes to you? Again, I'm not in the business of teaching you math or testing you on math. I'm in the business of having you get results, because that's how business works. I mean, just to show you how this went, apps, finance. Let me take this down one more just to show you. What would happen, let's say, if we have daily, 365? You get up to 5.39%. There's only so far this could push, but at the same time, it was how the banks were able to legally circumvent that ceiling at 5.25%. And it's just become kind of a tradition. So for example, in car loans, they report the APR, but that's not the effective rate. By law, in almost every state, and I believe in federal law for interstate, you have to disclose the APR and the effective rate. So that loan that I did over there for the car loan, where the heck was it? Oh, that was the 4.59% apps, finance, effective rate. Compounding monthly is an effective rate of 4.69%. And by state and federal law, that effective rate must be disclosed along with the APR. They must both be shown in the contract. Now, there was a time when the effective rate was in tiny print, and they stopped them from doing that so that you could see what this basically means. Is that 4.59% paid, divided up into 12 periods, is the same as an annual rate of 4.69%. That's basically what it says. And it's useful to know that, especially when the interest rates that you're paying are high. So for example, one last one, and I'll get off this subject. Apps finance, take you down to the effective rate. On a credit card with a 19.99% APR on the card, and you make 12 payments a year, you're actually paying 21.9293%. So it does bite. When the interest rates get high, That is actually a noticeable difference between what you see and what you actually pay. So there's that. Now, let me take you to the example of you, sir, and your child. Okay? Starting today, $2,000 in the bank every year for 18 years. So in other words, the last payment will occur when the child has his 17th birthday, and then the whole amount will ride forward a year, and then you bring it out. Starting today tells you right there we've got an annuity due. So, apps, finance, TVM solver, 18 years, just one payment a year. And let's say that you have an APR is, let's say, 3.50% in a cumulative CD. 3.5, and there will be not divided, it's divided by one because it's only one payment a year. You rock forward. There is no initial amount of money being put in. There's no kicker. It's all just payments. Each one of them, $2,000. Now, this might error here. I might need to put a negative on that zero. I don't think it's quite that bad. But you do need to come down here and say that these are at the beginning of each period. Don't forget to do that, for heaven's sakes. I'm going to ask you this, I promise you. The question that I give you on the midterm will look very similar to this. Just a change in numbers, but it'll still be the core problem. Just show me that you know how to do this. Come back up here. Like I said, I might error because it might want a negative on that zero. Alpha solve, $50,714. That's how much at the child's 18th birthday you will give that child. Well, you say, well, you know, yeah, go ahead.
I just wonder if we put the negative number, if we have a different value.
I don't think it would. Let me try it. Just out of curiosity. Just for shots and giggles. I was a little concerned there. That'll come out to be a positive is what'll happen. Alpha solve.
No, PMD is negative number.
Oh, I can do it that way too. Insert a negative. Yeah, I could do that. Yeah, that'll do it too. It's actually, the rule is that the calculator wants something to be negative. A debit against a credit, I think they did, or something, I don't know. But anyway, let me show you another stupid pet trick here. You were thinking, well, this isn't going to work. You see, I know very well that my kid is going to need $80,000 for his first semester of college. It won't be that bad, but it might seem that bad. Let's say I wanted to give that kid $80,000. Whoops, not that. No, you don't get it. The kid isn't that good. Okay. Well, now I can say, well, what payment would get that for me? Alpha solve. Well, I'd have to put in $3,154 about $3,155. You can solve, as long as you have all the other numbers, you can solve for any number here. Okay, let's say I want to put in $3,000 and I want to make sure that I get $80,000 out. What APR would I have to find at a bank to accomplish that? Really? Yep, that sure is. I have to put in alpha. Wow, I'm getting so ahead of myself, getting excited about all these different possibilities. Yeah, sorry about that. Alpha solve. I'd have to get, it would be a 4%. If I want, you can set any of these you want and just get, set them all and then just find out what the one is that you can't solve. Now that's what I was talking about at the beginning of this time we're together here, is this power you have to alter the scenario and not have to go back and punch in numbers into a calculator that has a single line that you're trying to fish back and forth on, or certainly not looking up table numbers and working it through. You've got it in this kind of an app. Now there are other tricks that you can do along the way. One, eventually we have to face something Excel does this too. The one thing is that Excel is cumbersome for simple problems. For big problems, for major problems, it's much more powerful. The part where Excel comes shining through is when you have unlevel annuities. In other words, that's the typical thing you're looking at in the analysis of a free cash flow. You've got all these numbers going out for 10 years. You've got to bring that annuity. It is an annuity, and you've got to bring that present value of that. This is not going to help you. Excel will just smash that thing out really nicely. You say P equals NPV, and then you just sweep down your array of numbers you want to bring back to the present, and there's your Uncle Bob. It's all done for you. Now, again, the calculator can't do that, but we're not there, and these are actually very common problems, what I'm showing you now. The one last one that I did want to show you, well, there are a couple of things left tonight, but one last thing that I did want to show you is something that kind of an oddball that I don't see very textbooks talk about too much, and I mentioned it at the beginning. What happens if you're putting your payments in, say, every year, but you're putting them into an account that has some compounding other than a year? Find the future value of $100 paid at the end of every month of every year, let's say. For 6 years in an account that pays 4.20% compounded semi-annually . Now I caution one thing. The textbook is actually a darn good textbook, but sometimes it just says, well, you can do it this way, and then you can do it this way, or you could do it this way, or you could do it this way. Now let's look at the graphical representation and the timeline of these different ways. That can get tedious, especially I don't imagine you have an eternity to play with all the different possible ways to get an answer. We could do this as a TI. It's actually very easy. What we'll do, now you gotta watch it here, it's interesting because is this an ordinary or an annuity due? Tell me. Do you see it? Yeah.
Ordinary annuity.
Bingo, it's an ordinary annuity because they're at the ends of the periods. Now, it could be at the beginnings, it could be at the ends. Just keep an eye on that in the problems in your homework, in a question that I could ask on an exam. Do it and don't think about what I'm doing here, just do it. 6 years. Don't worry about the compoundings here. The I percent is 4.2. There's no kicker at the beginning. Your payments are $100, and I will put a negative on that. Did I say 100 on those? Yeah, 100. Now we're going to get to future value. C over Y, make that, what did I say? Was it compounding quarterly, or did I say semi?
Semi,
okay. I think the example they show you in the book is a semi too. On this one, you put a 2. That's where you handle the compounding for this one. And then make sure you put it on N, then bring it up here and find your future value. Alpha, solve. It'll be $667.38. Normally, you leave the P over Y and the C over Y alone. They just get in your way. But this is one where any other way you do it would be really more complicated. And I promise you, when you look in the book, you'll see what I mean by that. But if you do it with this, all you have to do to manage a difference in timing between cash flow and compounding is to just show the compounding in that C over Y. That's all you need to do to get the answer. Don't make it complicated. I was looking at the way they were showing it in the book, and it's right, but I started having this look in my head like I was singing "The Wheels on the Bus Go Round and Round." This solves the problem a lot faster and a lot cleaner. Now, last thing that I wanted to do for you here, I might even be able to let you go a little early, unless you want to stay, maybe get the first of the snow coming down. But, okay. In financial planning, the whole trick is what you're seeing here. Most financial planning is based upon having your wealthy clients. We don't financially plan for the poor, unfortunately. But you have your wealthy clients say, these are my goals. I want to buy a new house in 5 years. I want a car in 3 years, every 3 years. I've got 2 kids, one is 7 years old, one is 9 years old, and I want to start putting money away so that they have money for their tuition when it comes due. So financial planning, all you're doing is you're finding each of those future values and you're finding the payment stream, the level annuity that will do that. You add up those payments in those level annuities, the monthly payments, and you say you write a check to me for this every month and every one of your goals will happen. In 5 years, we'll have a down payment for that house. In so many years, 3 years, you'll have your car. Your new cars. For the one kid in 11 years, he'll have his tuition for college and all that. It's all there. Now, what would happen if you said, well, okay, what if I needed to make 4 annual tuition payments for the kid? But I want to put enough money away so that I can accomplish that. This is exactly how a pension works. We figure out a defined amount of money that will create an annuity from there. And then we see what annuity paying in will get us to that value that starts the annuity of the pension. So let's say you, sir, are going to retire at 60 years old. Now, the actuarial tables say that you will live to 80 years old. Okay, in your case, 75. Okay, we'll give you 80, okay? I'm feeling generous tonight. Okay, so we would like to have you get a defined benefit. A defined benefit of $2,500 per month for 20 years. Okay? So what would be the amount I would need when you were 60 to do that? Let's say that we're going to invest at 8% every month. So you're, what are you, about 25?
35.
You, really? God, I feel old. Heck with you. Okay. 35. So we've got 25 years with monthly payments. Well, no. Let's do it this way. We're going to do the back end first. We want you to live from 60 to 80. So let's say that's approximately 20 years. Yeah, it might be 21. I'm just showing you the example. And let's say that we are going to put the money in at 8%, backing up 12 months per year. Now, what we're needing to do is see the present value. Never mind the future value, that'll be zero. Get this back down to one. And let's see what the present value. And we're going to say that we want to put in, we want you to have $2,500 a month for those 20 years, whoops, that's 20 times 12. What has to be the amount of money in the account at the day you hit 60 years old in order for that amount to pay you out $25 a month for 20 years? Alpha solve. We would have to have in that account about $300,000. That's what would have to be there when you hit 60. Now we have to find out how much you would be putting in every month into the pension for the next 25 years in order to hit that value. So now we're going to say 25 years of monthly premium, pension premium, at that same interest rate of 8%, what would be the present value? Now, you could do this as an annuity due if you wanted to. Matter of fact, I'm going to make it an annuity due. You start paying right away as soon as you start your employment. It's not going to make much difference. So what payments do I have to put in order to achieve a future value of negative 298,885.73. And then I can zero out this amount because there's no kicker in there. So what we're saying is, for 300 months at 8% compounded monthly, how much do I have to put in order to hit $298,886. You'd have to put in $312 every month into the pension to achieve that. That's what you'd have to do. That's how we do it. That's how we calculate it. We calculate your pension premiums based upon when you'll retire, how long we'll have to pay you those pension payments after you retire until you kick the bucket, and then we figure it out. Now, here's where the pension crisis happened. I'll even show you that here. The first part of this calculation was correct, the 8%. The unfortunate part was that the charters in almost every state and in local governments and in many corporations, there was a policy. Now, when I say policy, I'm talking about a written statement about what kinds of investments can be made. And those written policy statements almost always say AAA corporate bonds or something like that, or high-grade government. That's the only investments that you can pretty much make. You can't put it into stocks, you can't put it into lower grade bonds, you have to put it into AAA. Which means that the actual percentage at which the money was accruing over the working life wasn't 8%. Over the past 50 years, it's been on average about 3%. That was for the crisis. Now let's see how much there is actually in the account when you hit 60, if all they can earn is 3%. Alpha, solve. About a third to a half of what was needed. That was what we mean by the underfunded pension. They are a crisis that is going to explode like you wouldn't believe within the next 10 years as all the boomers and even some of the millennials start to retire. These pension funds are completely underfunded because we defined the benefit, but we also made it so that that benefit could not, the present value of that benefit over a retiree's life couldn't be hit. You just can't hit that mark. You would have to have actually made their pension premium payments double what they are. That would have done it. But other than that, I mean, we've got a pension crisis because we were defining the benefit as if it were accrued at 8% when it did not accrue at that at all. It accrued at 3%. Across the country, almost every state, most local and regionals, many corporate and government agency pension plans, they're all underfunded. How much are they underfunded? You take this difference between what they need and what that will happen. We've worked it out, and the number is around $250 billion. But I'll be in my grave by that time, and it will be your problems, not mine. And I won't tell you where I'm buried because I don't want you coming to kick my dirt on my grave. You got the idea though? You see, just the simple lecture I did tonight can bring you to realistic answers. Now, how do we deal with this? Well, obviously we're going to have riots when we can't pay these pensions. We're going to print money. The government will come to the rescue and print money, which will create hyperinflation and all that, but hey, again, that's your problem, not mine. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.